I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to Amazing FBA. And this is a bonus Christmas episode. It's not a bonus episode. It's episode 23. I'll give it a normal number. But, yeah, this is going to be a little bit of a different episode. It's going to be possibly less structured than the usual ones. I'm afraid I'm recording it on my iPhone because I'm away on the road, as it were, visiting family and relatives, as is often the case at this time of year. And, yeah, I just wanted to reflect on my year on Amazon. Basically, I've had product live since the 30th of November 2014. I had to think about what year it is because we're nearly in 2016. So that's pretty much exactly a year and a month. But really, it was from December. So I would say it's been a year and a month from the December of last year that I've had sales and products live. And it's been about a year and a half, a bit over actually, that I've been really working towards an FBA business in the sense that I got ASM training. I think I started in May 2014. So I haven't exactly been an overnight success, if I can count what I've done so far as a success at all. But it's time to pause and reflect, I think. And I think that's a natural thing to do at this time of year. I remember also working with a life coach quite a few years ago who was very helpful, actually. She did actually result in me going and training for a different career from the one I was doing at the time. So it did actually have a real impact. If those of you are a bit cynical about life coaching, you may or may not be. I don't know if anyone's had coaching yet who's listening. Anyway, I remember her saying that, you know, January is a bit of a low energy time. So it's not a great time for New Year's resolutions, as in making great big plans, but it's a good time to reflect and review. And I think there's something in that. I mean, I will be making, as it were, not New Year's resolutions, but I will be making plans and goals for next year. But it's a time to reflect. And I think that if you're just getting started with FBA, then too much reflection is going to mean you don't get going. But I think what's very powerful indeed is taking action and then reviewing and correcting course. You know, that might be quite big, it might be quite little tweaks. And I think that's a sort of general rhythm that you want to be developing for any kind of business, really, or just life in general. But let's be specific, for an Amazon-based business, FBA, do some research, do some study or learning. I mean, hopefully a podcast will be part of that for you. If it is, I'm very happy that it's going to be helpful for you. And then take action, and then see what the results of the action are. And this is the point I'm making here, or this is the thing I'm doing now. Review and evaluate, and sometimes just reflect. Sometimes conscious thought is okay and very powerful. Sometimes analysis, sitting there with a spreadsheet, is very powerful. I mean, I did that at the end of this financial year. Well, not financial year, but the end of this sort of period of activity, because after Christmas it's going to be dead for me, partly because I've got no inventory in, and partly because it was the natural time, therefore, to review whether I was making profit on products and to make a sort of go, no-go decision, as they say, or a kill or go decision. And that was very powerful. I shared that in episodes 21 and 22, where I talked about financial basics. And the reason that I was dealing with finances is because at this time of year, I'm often getting my tax return ready. If you're listening in the United States or in the world outside the UK, in the UK, we've got to get our tax returns done and pay up the tax owed by the end of January. So it's always this time of year, I tend to pull my accounts together. So that's one reason why I was talking about finance at this particular time of year. So it might be relevant for you as well if you're based in the UK. That was one thought that really occurred to me that I wanted to communicate, is that it, bigger than just the sort of tactical stuff, just take time to pause and reflect at a certain point whenever is appropriate and look back on things. So here are the common things that I would suggest you look back on and learn from. Number one is product choices, which kind of comes down to the same thing as looking back at the numbers, really. If you've made a product choice that has got problems, they break down into one of very few number of very particular areas. So here's what I would say is that number one problem is there's not enough demand. And you can tell that by looking through your overall marketplace. You could use Jungle Scout or any more sophisticated tools, but that would do the job. And if you can see that after the first product, the demand drops off a cliff, like you've only got, you know, 10, 50, 100 units per month. Yeah, months, not day, guys, being sold, then you can see that obviously there's very little left for anyone who isn't the top product. So that could be a mistake that you've made. If you've made a mistake, the top product is taking nearly all the sales out of a market, the top two products, and if it's got, you know, several thousand reviews, which it can do in a case of a cheap product, then you're not really going to compete with that. And that's the first thing. The second thing is, obviously, there are two linked problems: not differentiating your product enough and having a lot of competition. Now, the reason you would want to differentiate something is if there is a lot of supply of the same product or same kind of product, right? So that only comes in when you've got a lot of competition. So let's look at it one thing at a time. First of all, if you've got a very competitive product, that means is that you've got a lot of people supplying the same product as you, which then means you need to differentiate. Now, if you don't do a differentiation, you have a lot of people competing, what you'll find is the clues are that you may or may not make sales, but it's very, very price sensitive. And it's very sensitive to a degree as well to the number of reviews you've got and the number of stars, the average star of the review. So, for example, if you drop from 4.8 stars average review to 4.4 and your sales fall off a cliff, it may be that you're also in a very competitive environment and you're not differentiating yourself, right? Now, another problem you can have is you can make good sales at quite a decent price, but then once you do once you crunch your figures, you'll find that you're spending a hell of a lot of money on advertising, and that's stripping out all your profit. Now, that was the case with one of my products, which I'm effectively discontinuing. I mean, I'll keep the listing open. It's got a lot of reviews, got about 340 or something like that, probably more than 350 anyway. It's around that level. And I spent an awful lot of money and time on it. It was my first product, but it's actually just not profitable. Now, again, that's because it's in a competitive market and it's not differentiated. Now, so that's the one thing, is you're looking back on the numbers and you're looking back on your product choices, you know, way back at the research stage, and now you're looking at the realities of what actually happens in the marketplace and realizing that you've made one of these mistakes. If you've made those, you might want to order less of your product or even just discontinue it and look for something different, okay? Equally though, if you look on the other side of that equation, is if you have found a product that has reasonable demand and have to be high, say it's selling 300 units a month, which is 10 a day. And bear in mind that things like Jungle Scout will take the average across 12 months, and it is something of an estimate. It's a fairly decent estimate. It's one of the best out there, but it is not precise. So bear that in mind also, so that you will get bigger sales than that in the run-up to Christmas, because it's the peak time for any kind of retail, and Amazon's no exception. And by the way, Amazon really grew in our online sales generally, but Amazon specifically really grew this year in the UK, whereas the UK high street had a rather disappointing year, which is no surprise to me. It was the news to the newspapers, but for me, I'm like, yeah, everything's going online, wake up and smell the coffee. So we're in an overall growing marketplace, guys, which is a good thing to bear in mind and a heartening thing if you're an Amazon seller. But what happens there sometimes is that in the UK that the sales volumes are a lot lower than the USA, but that's okay as long as you can get your 300 units a month on average, as I said, which may be more before Christmas and less, say, early January when everyone's run out of cash. And also there isn't any particularly imperative reason to buy immediately. So that is one side, but then you've got the competition. Now, I've managed to find a product which is exactly the same apart from having a UK adapter, which gives you a tiny clue about what it is, and I'm not giving you any more clues, which is exactly the same as the one in the USA, but the only difference is that the demand is pretty similar, or even in the USA, in theory, much higher if you have the top spots, but the competition is much more intense, intense in the sense of lots of other, many more sellers with the same or almost the exact same product. In some cases, I suspect it is the exact same model. Then also they have a lot more reviews each, and the advertising cost is higher. What that means is it costs you loads more for giveaways, and then you have to pay a lot more money for advertising, so it strips all the profit out. That's the USA situation with that product. Pretty much the same exact product in the UK, I hardly have to give any units away for reviews. I think I gave away 40 out of 500, and the cost of advertising per unit was something like 50p per sale. It sort of averaged out at that over the sort of run-up to Christmas. Now, that's not a typical period compared to the rest of the year, so it might be higher or lower. I'm not even sure yet because I haven't had it in play for long enough, but in the USA the equivalent was $3.50 per unit, which is whatever that is, £2 something, so about four or five times higher, so astronomically higher. So that, looking back and reflecting on that and specifically getting the figures first, and then reflecting on the figures, was a very powerful moment for me, because then I spoke to my mentor and I said, look, I'm feeling like, even though I've put a ton of money and time and effort into promoting this product in the USA, I'm going to have to leave it and abandon it and focus my money and attention on other products, and then expanding the product line to other potential products that could work. And he said, yeah, well, you know, that's actually, you've got to do that sometimes. You know? So I was on the right line. Sometimes you just need somebody to tell you what your instincts are telling you, and trust your instincts. But it was good to reflect that from somebody who's got vast experience. So yeah, sometimes you've got to be prepared to walk away from something you put a lot of effort into. You just need to follow the numbers. You need to give it enough time and enough money. But I've had that product in play for a year and a month. So that is more than enough time to assess it. I mean, in future, I'll probably be more brutal about cutting out things that aren't working and giving it less time. But then partly my mentality was a bit different, which is one thing that I would suggest that you shift. Just before we move on from that, one point I wanted to make is that you shouldn't just reflect based on your anecdotal feeling, you know, anecdotal evidence, or your feeling of, oh, that product isn't doing very well. Look at the numbers, collect the numbers, take the trouble to find, you know, go through all your Amazon campaigns and get the cost per click and the cost overall, the advertising cost of sales, all those figures. Go through all your documents that you've got from your supplier and check the exact cost of freight and things like that. Now, I'm quite comfortable compiling spreadsheets. I get a bit lazy at just kind of going, oh, well, that's probably about this much and about this much, which for the purpose of teaching is fine. You can make the figures up. But for the purposes of actually looking at your products and whether to go or continue or not continue with the product, whether it's a possible product or whether it's an existing product, you really need to look at the absolutely nitty-gritty detail and put it together painstakingly in the details. And I would suggest a spreadsheet's the easy way to do that. There are other things called Manage by Stats, I believe, which is a very good program or online, but a software that you can subscribe to for managing things. If you have more SKUs, that is, more product lines than I have currently, only got 4 in the States and 1 in the UK. So if I expand my product line much further, I might use that. For the moment, I like the simplicity of a spreadsheet. You don't even have to use a spreadsheet. You can use a piece of paper and a calculator. I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is, though, do the detail work. But then I did 2 further things. I reflected on it and I allowed my gut instincts to come in, like, and allowed myself to feel what I felt. One thing was, you know what? I don't want to give up on this because I put a lot of time and energy onto this. And also, it's got good reviews. And then the other thing was, yeah, but I feel like I'm hemorrhaging money here and I want to make profit now. I think it's appropriate at this stage to stop just trying to gain market share and go for profitability. And that's, so I reflect, I allow both feelings to come up and sort of dwelt on it a bit, not for long, but sort of slept on it, if you like. And then I spoke to somebody more experienced and wiser than myself, who agreed with my overall assessment, which is, you know, to cut loose from a loss-making profit or non-profit-making product. I mean, it's just about breaking even, I think. So, interesting process to go through. Now, there's a couple of other products that I've got going. Another one that was quite new in the USA, which had was starting to become profitable again pretty quickly. Again, the number of reviews needed was much, much lower than my first product. The cost of advertising was much, much lower, like about a fifth. So that is now something that I've just put an order in and put a deposit about a week ago for that to be renewed. And I'm going to go back with 500 units. We only had 200 units as a sort of test order size. And I'm now going to get some of those sent over to the UK and test whether they sell in the UK. My instinct is that the competition level is going to be even lower than for my first product. So that won't be an issue. So it should be profitable. Now, whether there's much demand, so the absolute profit may not be very high. I'm not sure about the demand level. But it's good enough to expand that. Now, that's another thing that that brings me to, which is, once you've got some data, once you've actually got out in the marketplace and found your customers and seen certain types of products sell, you can then begin to trust expanding that product line rather than going back to basic research. Ben Cummings talks about the sort of, I can't remember what he calls it exactly, but the 80% chance rule or something. Now, he basically tries to get very high probability of success products when he first goes in to a market. And then once you've built the brand, you can then go back and expand out to what's obviously needed for those particular customers. Or they'll actually tell you, like, do you do an X? Do you know, for example, if you sell silicon spatulas, they might say, oh, do you sell saucepans? Do you sell slotted spoons, you know, for example. Yeah? People will actually ask you, and that gives you a very, very major clue. And then, because you know your market better by then and have actually asked for those things, you can do a bit of numbers research, and you probably should, and I probably could be stronger on my research, as I said, reflecting on the process so far. That's an area I need to tighten up on. But basically, you can go back and go, well, you know, the numbers look decent. Somebody's been asking about it. My instincts tell me this would make sense, therefore I'm just going to go and order a small amount of like the minimum order quantity, or maybe double that for unbranded stuff, and then get out on the marketplace, do a few giveaways on ANZ Tracker or Snagshout or whatever mechanism you use, or even friends and family if you're based in the UK and you're selling in the UK, or if you're based in the US and selling in the US, that's a lot easier. Whatever it is, get some reviews, and then run pay-per-click, i.e. Amazon ads, auto campaign for a week, and then take those and spin those off, take the best performing keywords, spin those off into a manual campaign, and, you know, very, very standard launch stuff, and then just see if the thing sells, and look at your numbers after a while, you know, say about a month, 2 months, and is it going to be profitable? And if it is, then order more. And you'll probably run out of inventory, by the way, doing it this way. But, you know, it's up to you. If you want to go in deeper, you know, plunge in feet first, then order more inventory up front. But the point is, the mechanism, the process is very simple, which is you see what's selling, you find related stuff, especially if you've got very good signals from your marketplace or very explicit requests for that sort of particular product. Then you double check the demand and supply and make sure that that looks good. And then you order a test inventory of it. Don't bother branding it, just see if it'll sell. If it does, go back and place a minimum order quantity for your branded inventory, i.e. with your packaging and logo, so the logo printed onto the product probably, depending on the nature of the product and your own packaging for it, and then take it from there. If it's really successful, go back and make a really big order. So in other words, you're starting to get away from purely researching things based on a sort of Amazon specific system, and you're starting to respond to the marketplace. Yeah, it's still a marketplace based on Amazon, but you are beginning to respond to individual customer hints and use your common sense and your intuition a bit. And the main point is you test things. So it doesn't really, in a way, matter where you get your ideas from, whether it's research or from your intuition or from your customers. Obviously, it does matter in the sense that good quality research is more likely to lead to success than no research or bad quality research. And your customers asking for something is much better than you just guessing. But the ultimate test is the same, which is you get a certain amount of it, you stick it out in the marketplace, you do a basic promotion and launch, and you see if the thing sells. And if it does, you see if it's profitable or it's going to become profitable. And it's really that simple. So in a way, you can get more courageous and more experimental as you go on, and stop trying to get it absolutely perfect first time. You accept that really, you know, when you pick some products, some will take off, some won't. Now, obviously, you need to have a product picking process that maximizes the probability of things taking off. And as I said, that is something I need to work on. I'm going to be doing more research. I've become quite lazy in a way about going for training and training myself and learning. I don't feel necessarily the need to join a mastermind that's going to cost me £6,000 for the next 6 months or year or something, and spend all of my company's profits on that over the next year. I personally, after spending about £3,500 on ASM training and various meetings for about a year that followed up on that, don't feel the need for that. However, I do feel that I should rejoin a sort of peer group, a mastermind of fellow sellers, and also I must make more use of my mentor, who, although that charges me on an hourly rate, but I think that's very, very, very well invested money. I would encourage any one of you who's not yet a member of it to, if you haven't had some kind of structured training, preferably face-to-face element of it as well, I would definitely encourage you to do that. I mean, hopefully the podcast can be an element of that. If you've got a business background, or you, especially if you've got an online marketing background, then that may be enough. If you can afford it, I would encourage you to do face-to-face training. I'd also very much encourage everyone to join any form of mastermind or peer group, if only to hold each other accountable. If it can go further and you can have face-to-face meetings and discuss what's working, what isn't working, the latest strategies and tactics, that's extremely powerful. And I would also really advise anyone to have, whether or not they're a member of all these other things, to join up, to have a mentor that they work with individually, at least monthly, and the very, very least in their sort of launch phase when they're learning about stuff. It will cost you some money, but I do think, and maybe I'm biased because my whole life has been geared to doing one-to-one coaching and training, but I find it immensely valuable. I mean, my mentor probably helped me make, I don't know, I can't measure it, but probably several thousand dollars extra worth of sales for the December period alone because of certain tweaks she suggested to the listings and you know, various things that came from experience and were just on the money. Okay, so that's the value of mentors being brought back to me. And really, that's another thing that I would say in terms of reflecting versus planning process. Once you've done your reflecting, then often it becomes clear what you need to do going forward. So in other words, looking back tells you where you need to go looking forwards. Going forwards, one of those horrible corporate phrases, which I should try and avoid, but, you know, looking forward perhaps is a better phrase. So looking back for me has told me the things that I've done that have worked and the things that haven't worked so well. And going forwards or looking forwards, really, yeah, I need to take my own advice. I have been in paid training. I have a paid mentor who is fabulous. I need to phone her more regularly or on a need-to-know basis, but that's really something that I need to consciously do more. And with her, I need to create more of a strategic plan, which is something I've not really had up till now. Maybe that's even not been appropriate because actually the amount of time I've had to spend on the business versus what I thought I would have and the amount of time it's taken versus what I thought it would have been utterly out of sync anyway. So meaning I thought I would get coming, say, in the run-up to Christmas, 2 days a week full-time on it, and then, you know, 2-3 hours a day on it. Reality has been that there's been all sorts of different crises going on in various parts of my life, and they've had to be dealt with. So that means also and personal life has taken more time, but that's an important investment. So, yeah, the reality is that I probably had about a third of the time I was planning. And equally, and this is very typical of me, and you may be that kind of person, that if you make a list for the day of things to do, it's actually a week's worth. And therefore, I grossly underestimate the time that things are actually going to take. Or to put it another way, I'm probably wildly optimistic in a way about that. That's okay as long as you know that of yourself and just build slack into the system. And that's another thing I would say about planning. If you're budgeting, for example, there are going to be all sorts of random costs that you couldn't even think that you didn't know that will come up. And things will cost you more than you initially budget. Years ago, I remember speaking to a very, very good arts management specialist who planned concerts, which are very, very cost-intensive things because you've got a huge amount of labour cost. Obviously, musicians cost money, stage management costs money, hiring a venue costs money, etc. And he said, look, even when you know what you're doing, you should put 10% contingency, i.e. planning for the unknown, allowing for the unknown, if you like, into a budget. Now, that is if you already absolutely know what you're doing, you're in a very stable market, you're in a market you really understand yourself. Now, if you're going into something new, I would say it's a rule of thumb, like, what do I know? 30%? I would add 50%. If you can afford it to your budget, I would even double it. You know, so in other words, if you think it's going to cost you £2,500 to get launched with an ASM business with a decent sized order plus giveaways plus promotion, including freight costs and, you know, setup costs, the cost of an accountant to check your accounts at the end of the year, setting up company, bank charges, you know, anything you can think of. And by the way, if you want to know the details of that, that's all available in other episodes. So check the show notes, which will be as ever at amazingfba.com/the number. So this is episode 23. So the show notes for this will be at www.amazingfba.com/23. But basically, what I'm saying is once you've done your research, you've learned from your peers or you've learned from a podcast like this or from paid training, whatever it is, you get your spreadsheet, or if you're old school, you can get a piece of paper. It doesn't really matter. Don't get hung up on the technology, but you need to get all the possible costs down there. You need to get realistic estimates or quotes for each element of it. I would still, if you can afford it, I would stick double that money aside if you really, really want to be safe. I would at least add 30% contingency to my budget, right? Once you've done it once or twice, you'll know what's going on. You can have more accurate budgets. Now, I could probably do a budget for product launch for my next upcoming product launch that is fairly accurate, so within about 20% of the right budget. However, things aren't always that simple. The Amazon marketplace is always changing. It's very dynamic. There's a lot of new sellers coming in all the time, pushing up the costs, changing the number of reviews you need, pushing up the cost of advertising. There are always changes in the Chinese economy that can put the price of products up or possibly even bring them down because there's a bit of a downturn in China. So it's quite a good time to be negotiating with the Chinese, really. Bear that in mind, by the way. So really speaking, you're going to be Yeah, you're going to be dealing with a fluctuating situation. So even if you've done it before, I would allow 20% contingency in your budget, preferably 50. And if you're starting out, 50, preferably 100% contingency, meaning you plan what you think it's going to cost and then double it. Equally, in terms of time, if you think it's going to take you 3 months to get launched, then I would allow 6. And by the way, it doesn't mean you shouldn't push towards getting it done in 3. And if you're really ambitious, you'll sacrifice other things. You'll sacrifice time with your family. You'll sacrifice time working on paid work, whatever. And that's okay. Don't get too obsessed with making it as an overnight success, though. I mean, I think there's, again, two things you need to do in terms of time management. One is allow for the fact that things will take a hell of a lot longer in some cases than you want them to. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're quicker than you expect. The classic part of that is ordering products and getting it into Amazon. But also keep pushing to get things done as well. So it's like a dual thing. Allow for the fact that things won't go according to plan necessarily, or according to what you wish, that your planning probably is just unrealistic, but push hard every day and every week to get the time in. So to put it in a nutshell, I think your long-term time planning, we're talking over weeks and months, needs to have a lot of slack in it and needs to be a lot more realistic than you probably would be. But your week and day planning of your personal activity needs to be a lot higher. So if you think it's going to take 3 months to get your product launched and you're going to work an hour a day on it, I would tell you that in reality, you should allow possibly 6 months, but work 2 hours a day on it. That way, you're not going to be disappointed, not going to be setting unrealistic expectations up, but you are much more likely, because you're working twice as many hours, to actually hit a much earlier timescale anyway. So you might get launched within 4 months, for example. Right? It's very simple, but I mean, it's profound psychological change. So instead of setting big goals of achievement outcomes, a lot of which is out of your control, guys, because once you picked a supplier and place an order, that the amount of time it takes is totally up to them, isn't it? And that if there's delays, for example, in China with, I mean, I've talked a lot about this. So if you follow the podcast, you'll have heard a hell of a lot about this, but bear in mind, in the procurement phase of it, for example, you will have potential delays from, the following: the box supplier for the factory, is behind, so that puts it behind a week. The actual supplier runs out of raw materials, so they have to order more in. By the way, they normally order the raw materials when they get your deposit in, so they won't have them hanging around the factory, so it won't be that instant anyway. What else? The manufacturer gets, this is very common, guys, the manufacturer gets a big order from a much more important customer, i.e. they give them a lot more money, and your order gets shoved to the back of the queue. That's very common. And what else? The Chinese authorities launched an anti-corruption campaign and just shut down the ports for a week. That's happened to me. There's a monsoon and therefore the freight is delayed. That's happened to me. Or typhoon, I should say. So they have kind of a monsoon out in the East Asia. There's a monsoon season, which I believe is June and July. But don't quote me on that. I could double check that if you really want to know. There will be a random holiday you hadn't seen coming. By the way, the Chinese New Year is coming up in February. Pretty much all the workers will be leaving their factories to go back home for that annual trip back home in late January, and they may not be back at work until early March. So it could take 5-6 weeks out of production schedule. Pretty horrible. So if you want to get your orders in now, I'd advise you to move fast. I'm currently wrapping up my order for that very reason for about another 4 product lines. Yeah, what else? Oh, yeah, of course, then DHL could do some mess up. There could be a mess up with customs. Customs brokers could be involved. That will take time. FBI inspection might take, as they have just done, 3 weeks to turn around something that they promised to do in 7 days, which is not something that's pleased me. So FBI inspection is now in my bad books. I still think it's probably one of the better options out there, but I'm exploring another possibility, which I will be using for some future deliveries or some consignments. FBI inspection is kind of in the middle of nowhere. I think that's the problem with it, really. And also they get overwhelmed. Also, Amazon has had 100 units of products from me for about 3 weeks that they've also not managed to get into inventory yet because, again, they've been overwhelmed, right? Amazon is pretty efficient, I have to say. They have their downsides, but when it comes to handling inventory, getting in, warehoused, and out, they are incredible. But still, it's Christmas, or it being Christmas, so they have been overwhelmed. So there are some just off the top of my head list of the things that I have personally experienced. It's in the collection, never mind everyone else I know, hundreds of Amazon sellers. But that's just my personal list of what I have personally experienced of delays in the last few months. So in other words, you may think that a product's going to be live in 3 months. There are even just that little list. That wouldn't all happen, but two or three of them can happen at once. That could put you back 6 months, 6 weeks, I should say, sorry, without even anything else getting involved. And that does happen. That has occurred and will occur. So that could mean that instead of 3 months launch, you're basically going to be looking at a 5 month window. Don't stress that. Yeah. Do what you can and work harder. So that brings me to another sort of philosophical point. And I'm sorry that I'm moving point to point, but I'm just following really, you know, my thoughts. But they are thoughts based on reflecting on a year. They're not random thoughts off the top of my head. They are reflections on real life experience. I want to make that point. But the other thing that brings me to is a really profound psychological shift that you've got to try and make. And you just, again, in life, right, really, but especially in an Amazon business, you are outsourcing loads of stuff to lots of people. That's great because it means from the beginning, the business is scalable, right? So in other words, if you want to sell more products, you don't need to work more hours necessarily, right? Not once you set the systems up. But what it means is that you are outsourcing the manufacture of products and the freight of the products, and if you're selling in the USA, the inspection of the products to other people. Now, if you're selling in the UK and you're a UK-based seller, or if you're a US-based seller selling in the US, then you don't have to outsource the inspection. That's one thing. But then you're outsourcing the warehousing, which is Amazon's job, and the selling and the marketing, which is Amazon's job again. Okay, you're not outsourcing marketing as in driving traffic to the listing if you do things like Google advertising, Facebook, YouTube, which is something I've been very lazy about. But otherwise, you know, Amazon ads are an Amazon-based thing. You've got to monitor it, but they're doing it. They're driving the traffic to the listing. Yes, you've got to choose the right photos for the listing, but the listing is run by Amazon. They will pick and pack. They will fulfill. You know, they can even do customer service. So they're doing so much of it, which is great. But what it means is there's a lot that is just not under your direct control. There will be cock-ups. You need to learn to live with that. Now, I say that as a person that's very impatient, that is a bit of a control freak. I mean, after all, I conduct professionally. I mean, they're the world's biggest control freaks. And so they should be, you know. But when it comes to things that are outsourced, you should do everything under your power that you can do. And don't just sit back and go, oh, woe is me, and let everything go to hell in a handbasket. Equally, if you can't change how fast something's happening, don't sit around stressing on moaning on Facebook groups. You just need to get over it and just go, right, that's not in my control. What can I do? So there's a very, very good prayer, which apparently they use in Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's because, I don't know, I guess maybe they have to learn to deal with their addiction. But whatever it is, I came across it a while ago because a friend of mine is unfortunately had to deal with alcoholism, but has successfully overcome it, and told me about this prayer, which I just think is so powerful. I'm going to say it again. I've said it before, and I probably will say it yet again. Try and get the serenity to accept the things you can't change, the courage to change the things you can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Right, and I cannot think of a better way to put it in terms of getting the right mentality for Amazon, because really there is so much that you can't change, that is out of your control, and you just need to just chill the hell out. If it's out of your control, don't stress. It ain't going to do anyone any good. Then there are a lot of things that you can change. You can send an email. You can get in touch. You can make sure the right information goes to Amazon so they don't put your product in hazmat, i.e. think of it as hazardous. There's the being more precise in your communication with your suppliers. There's being prepared and armed with knowledge about how to get through customs. There's finding a warehouse that is quicker than FBA inspection, or there's getting in touch with them saying, look, I know you've got a lot on, but can you do one case of those products for me, and then I'll allow for a delay for the rest of them. For example, there are always things under your control you can do. Do those things. Don't be lazy. Don't blame other people. You can blame other people if you want, but it's, you know, it's an indulgence. It's okay to indulge. It's like, you know, having a drink or, you know, eating cream cakes. I mean, it's not good for you. That's okay. Indulge in it a little bit and then get on with what's good for you. So don't throw your toys out of the pram longer than you need to. If you're like me, you're going to go, oh my goodness, make a big drama out of it. Fine. Okay. Get it off your chest and move on. Yeah. That's pretty much the number one change that I want to see in myself and my mentality over the next year in life generally, but specifically in the Amazon business. And then also, I think when it comes to generally, you know, dealing with the Amazon business. I think the other things I need to change is to have a bit more planning in place. Now that I know a bit more how the whole thing works, and now there's a bit more of a rhythm and a system to it. I think before that I was thinking very tactically, and I don't think when you're starting off that actually that's particularly wrong, because you can make big picture goals, but they aren't going to really relate to reality, my experience necessarily. They may, they may not. I mean, my goal was to be financially independent from my day job through the Amazon business by autumn 2014. Now, I put a hell of a lot less time in than I was expecting because I moved house to London. I started a new job, you know. So to be fair to myself, that wasn't going to happen once that had changed. And those things were changes that happened after I had made my resolutions, if you like, set my goals. Nevertheless, I did set a goal for this autumn of by the end of the period to have $25,000 a month turnover. Now, in fact, the turnover in my business was about $15,000. There was one fourth product in the USA, which was supposed to have been live, but was just weeks and weeks behind. So see previous point, which if I'd had that live, that might have actually pushed my overall revenue. I'm including the US and the UK markets here because I sell in both. That might have pushed my revenue up to more like $20,000, to be fair. So I'm not a million miles away from a $25,000 a month turnover. But of course, I was focused on turnover and not thinking about profit. Now I'm thinking about profit. Hopefully going forward, I will make that much more explicitly part of my goals and be less obsessed with turnover and more into profit. Remember, turnover is vanity, profit is sanity. And I really, now I know that. Now I really, really, really believe that. I made a lot of money this year, but it was mostly for other people, which is fine. Okay, so I've sold a total of over $50,000 worth of sales in the last 12 months. Maybe it's like $55,000 or something like that. But most of that went to Amazon and it also went to suppliers. And it went to everybody else, you know, FBA inspection and Earth Class mail between them. My warehouses in the USA have taken a very healthy chunk of cash off me. Thank you very much. So going forward, I'm going to make profit my goal rather than turnover. So you may be seeing less than spectacular turnover growth for me over the next 12 months. And I'm fine with that because I'm after profit. I haven't been sharing my profit figures because I think that's a very private part of the business. It could be that I'll be prepared to share that in the future, but you know, that's certainly a goal that I have. And then, yeah, make a plan, really, and work on it with a mentor and become part of a, you know, sort of membership group, a mastermind, if you like. But I'm not interested in, particularly in paying tons of money for the moment to hear from really amazing sellers. I want to work with people who are doing well, but at the next level above me or at my kind of level, so we can share and best practice and grow from there. And if the turnover grows nicely and there's enough profit left in the business, I'll be very happy to invest any amount of money in a mastermind that's paid for. But only when that makes sense. I'm not going to strip all the profit out of the business. That makes no sense to me. So hope that's been useful, guys. I know it's been a bit of a rambling one. I'm sorry about the sound quality and the background noise, but it's the only way I could get it in at this time of year. As ever, thank you so much for your time and thanks for listening to the podcast today. Thanks for listening to today's episode, but thanks for listening to the podcast in general. I really appreciate that time is a valuable commodity and time and attention are really the modern scarce commodity. I mean, money is one thing, but time and attention on the internet particularly and online in general are just a scarce thing. So thank you for giving me your time and energy and attention. Hope it's been useful. I'm going to be aiming to get a podcast a week on average out over the next few months. And I'm going to be aiming to grow the business quite forcibly now over the next few months. So I hope you'll enjoy following that journey and you'll learn from my mistakes and my, you know, what works for me as well. And in the meantime, I wish you a very happy Christmas if you've already had one, if you celebrate Christmas. But, you know, whatever your religion or belief or whatever you have that going for you, I wish you a happy whatever that is. And I certainly wish you a happy new year and a good time with your friends and family if you're celebrating. And please always get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. We've now got just over 100 members in the Facebook group. The 100th member will be receiving an Amazon voucher from me. I'll get in touch with you if that's you. And look forward to speaking to all of you at some point in person or via the Facebook group. Stay in touch and take care of yourself. And I will speak to you in the next podcast.